Welcome to the Center for Investment Excellence, a production of J.P. Morgan Asset Management. The Center for Investment Excellence is an audio podcast that provides educational insights across asset classes and investment themes. I'm David Lebowitz, global strategist with our multi-asset solutions business and host of the Center for Investment Excellence. With me today are Bob Culver, managing director at Security Capital Research and Management, and Pulkit Sharma, head of alternatives investment strategy and solutions at J.P. Morgan. Bob, Pulkit, welcome to the Center for Investment Excellence.
Great to be with you.
Thank you for having us.
Well, we are excited for today's conversation. So both Bob and Pulkit have been part of the Strategic Investment Advisory Group, or SIAG's, most recent effort around putting together a paper on public versus private real estate. You probably, for those of you who follow SIAG, you're aware that we're in the process of writing three different papers. We just released one earlier this week on credit. Next up is real estate. And then finally, we'll conclude with equities. So more to come from the SIAG group, but the purpose of today's conversation is to talk about real estate and, you know, commercial real estate, residential real estate. It's very much been front of mind, particularly over the past couple of years. Obviously, commercial real estate, certain parts of commercial real estate have fallen on challenging times, particularly the office sector. We think about the growth that we've seen in real estate assets overall, right? It's no longer just about office and industrial and retail and multifamily. We have data centers, manufactured homes, storage facilities, so on and so forth. So much larger opportunity set than what we were looking at, say, 15 or 20 years ago. And furthermore, as we've seen this growth in the underlying opportunity set, we've seen the creation of new vehicles. You know, it's not just about publicly traded REITs and private open-end or closed-end funds. We now have things like semi-liquid REITs, non-traded REITs, a variety of other vehicles that can give, you know, access to a broader swath of investors rather than just the institutional crowd who were historically the ones that were primarily able to access the real estate universe. So looking forward to our conversation today. And, you know, Pulkit, maybe I'll start with you. Let's just build this up from the ground up. What is the difference? Can you describe the differences between public and private real estate? Let's start there.
Yes, David. So quite a bit of differences. There are differences around structure. There are differences around sector composition. There are probably more nuanced differences around leverage and valuations. And ultimately, all of that feeds into the performance between public and private categories. But before I unpack these differences, maybe like I want to sort of set the stage with some definitions. So real estate at the most basic level is an income-producing, tangible, hard asset class, which generates over long periods of time a positive real rate of return. Now, for the purposes of the SIAG work, we have focused on income-producing real estate, so let's call it core real estate. Mm-hmm. That's high-quality, good-quality tenant, well-located assets. And the private markets, there is many gradients of that. So there is obviously the opportunistic and value-add space, which we're not talking about. We're talking about the core, private core space. And yep. And akin to that would be the REITs, listed REITs segment. So that neatly transitions into the first difference, which is the structural difference. So REITs are more liquid, daily traded, whereas the private core space is typically best efforts, quarterly liquidity, or with some of the newer segments, some windows of liquidity are offered in that space. Now, the more pronounced difference is in the sector composition. If you take the four major sectors, which is industrial, multifamily, office, and retail, 90% of the private core universe is in the four sectors, whereas only 50% of the REIT universe, the public listed universe, is in these four sectors. So 50% is these other extended sectors like self-storage, data center, life sciences. In fact, there's a lot of sector churn and a lot of adoption of the churn of these sectors in the REIT space. So for example, REITs have only 5% exposure to office. The privately held core space has 20%, close to 20% exposure. Both of them have cut their office exposure by half in the last decade, but the velocity and the magnitude is much faster in the REIT space. The more interesting phenomena which is happening nowadays is the crossover effect, which is a lot of the sectors which are mainstream in the REIT space, like self-storage and health, life sciences, are becoming mainstream in the private space. Mm-hmm. At the same time, larger pools of private money is taking down REITs private. So all the student housing REITs are now held by the private markets. Mm-hmm. So what does all that mean? It actually leads to differences in performance. The practitioners know this, but the sometimes a surprise for many, but the listed publicly held real estate space actually over long periods of time on the margin outperforms the private core universe. It does that with more liquidity. However, the trade-offs are that it comes with 2 times more volatility, 2 times more tail risk, and 2 times on average more correlation to the public equity markets. Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, you bring up a really interesting point, and one that a lot of our listeners probably aren't aware of, which is that over the long run, publicly traded REITs have actually outperformed, right? I think a lot of people hold this notion in the back of their mind that, you know, private tends to do better over time because of that lower volatility. Bob, I want to bring you into the conversation, and you know, you have exposure, obviously, to the world of REITs, but also to all different types of investor clients. What are some of the biggest challenges that you encounter when having the conversation about REITs and getting people to become more enthusiastic about the potential opportunity in real estate?
It is a wide range of clients, from individuals to institutional investors like endowments and foundations, insurance companies, corporate, public pensions. Really, all sophisticated large investors are those that are looking at real estate, public and private. And I think the most intuitive way and thing that I'd like to try to start with is, first of all, of course, understanding the goals of these investors in making an investment in our liquid public world, but then also reminding them that REITs are real estate. The buildings don't have a consciousness to perform differently based on the wrapped or structure around that asset. In the long run, the value of real estate, whether public or private, is going to be determined by the cash flow generating potential of a property or a portfolio of properties based on the supply and demand influences on that cash flow in a submarket over the long run. And I think that's a very intuitive way to think about it. Now, as Pulkit said, there are lots of differences, as we'll suss out here in our conversation, between the two. But putting them together can be a very powerful thing. And in fact, some of that volatility that you mentioned, the price changes of the real estate in the public world, can be a real opportunity. So I think as we talk to our investors, we're trying to understand their goals, as I mentioned. I'd say broadly, they kind of fall into two groups. One is using our liquid public real estate world as a way to add diversification to their portfolio, to their real estate or real assets allocation. There are probably 100 REITs in the US, all the different property types that Pulkit identified. That's over 40,000 properties and hundreds of markets across the country. So you can access that in a liquid, public, readily available way with transparency and the ability to transact in it. These are low levered businesses, on average, about 35% leverage. So they are producing that sort of stable core-like income for investors. The other investor type, I'd say, someone that is viewing our world as a way to make money. They can invest in all different types of real estate. They have large portfolios that provide that diversification already, but they come to us and say, we want to look for the best opportunities in your space. And that volatility, that pricing movement that Pulkit described, again, can be a real opportunity when you use the long-term value of real estate as your lens for assessing those different opportunities in our space.
And I think that that's really the key point. You know, a lot of people look at volatility as a negative. I would argue that when it comes to, you know, REITs and arguably equity markets more broadly, right, volatility can be both friend and foe. It can allow you to step into a market at a more attractive valuation or a more attractive price than would otherwise be the case. And so, Pulkit, that actually is a perfect segue into my next question, because we can see across our retail clients, our institutional clients, real estate is a strategic allocation, right? It's showing up more and more, particularly on the high net worth and the retail side. But to Bob's comment, right, there's a way to blend public and private. So can you talk to us a little bit about how you think about balancing the two within the context of a portfolio?
I think the combination of the two is quite powerful because you get, as Bob mentioned a little bit, you get the totality of the entire real estate landscape, the full breadth of the sectors, and in a more scalable manner. So it's a very strong blend. Now, if I look at the, in terms of blending, there are many approaches, but I think an active approach actually makes a lot more sense in the public and private real estate space. There are two basic ingredients for that. One is you have to have a breadth of securities, mm-hmm. check, and then you have to have dispersion among them. And there's massive dispersion. So it's 40% dispersion on a rolling four-quarter basis between sectors of REITs and 20% dispersion between the sectors in the private space. And actually a similar number among them between the private and public segments. There's also quite a bit of persistence of outperformance of one over the others. So all the necessary ingredients are there to build stronger total portfolios. Now, how do we do that is, when you look at quantitative and qualitative approaches, and the first idea is if you had a blank sheet of paper and we are maximizing returns, minimizing risk, maximizing the totality of the exposure base, then we come to a number which is close to a 60 to 80% exposure to private core real estate and 20 to 40% exposure to listed segments. Mm-hmm. And then you lean in and lean out. And especially the power of the lean in and lean out is magnified at the points of inflection. But again, there's very consistent dispersion between the two. There's conventional wisdom which says that REITs lead the private markets, which is true in some instances, but not true in many instances. If you look at data in the 70s and the 80s and 90s, that was not quite true. So have a kind of a process around first sizing these positions and then looking at the fundamentals, looking at the technicals, looking at how the macroeconomic environment is impacting the public and private markets and how their structure is changing is key to success in blending the two segments.
So you mentioned looking at the fundamentals. You mentioned looking at the technicals. You mentioned leaning in and leaning out. The one thing that you didn't mention was valuation. Mm-hmm. And so, Bob, I want to come to you with this one. When you're talking to clients, particularly the more opportunistic clients that are, you know, moving in and out of REITs as a way of trying to take advantage of dislocations in the market, how do you think about valuation? And how do you think about valuing REITs themselves? And then, you know, furthermore, how should people think about accessing the opportunity? So I guess there are two parts of that question. One being, what would be the pricing signal that you would be looking for to start to get excited about something that's happening in the REIT space? And then two, how do you think about the various vehicles that can be leveraged for accessing the underlying assets?
Great question, and certainly very topical for sure today. If you think about all of the people that could be investors in our securities, there's no licensing requirement to invest in a REIT. You could be a dedicated real estate investor like we are, but you could also be part of an S&P 500 index. There's 30 REITs in the S&P 500. You've got long-short hedge funds. You've got momentum investors. You have yield-focused investors. Each one of these different investor types has a different model and a different objective for their capital. And those folks can look at the same set of facts and come up with a different conclusion as to whether it's an attractive time to purchase or sell a property or a REIT. We're looking at it from the real estate lens and then checking our valuations against all of these other perspectives. For sure, right now, we're looking at very attractive pricing for equivalent core real estate in the public market. There was a recent transaction, ARC, just last Monday, that was taken private, and that was at a 6 cap rate, which is right in the middle of our assessment evaluation for that, looking at long-term private real estate. Well, you know, the private valuation methodology using appraisals is closer to the mid-4s. And so there's a huge delta looking at the same thing from a different lens where you can identify extraordinary opportunities. And that's certainly an anecdote of the kind of thing that we're seeing now and have seen for some time. REITs are very attractively priced right now. They're low leveraged. And I think also important right now is their access to capital. Right now, every financial asset inside, outside of real estate is repricing to the realities of a new risk-free rate. Real estate front and center, for sure, digesting that new regime. We have the ability in the public space, our REITs, to issue bonds in the public markets at very attractive pricing. There's lots of anecdotes of that out there, but Avalon Bay, a apartment REIT issued in December, $400 million, 100 basis points over the 10-year. That's extraordinary execution in a capital-constrained environment. So the ability to access capital and balance sheets is very, very important to us in assessing value right now. And looking to that private market valuation long-term for indicators of deep value. And then, as I said, also checking that perspective versus other yield multiples, NAV premium discounts, et cetera, to look for other checks on valuation.
That's very helpful. And maybe just asking one follow-up question. And so you have all of these different approaches to valuation. It obviously depends on kind of the end goal of the investor that you're dealing with. One of the things that we note in the paper and that we noted at the beginning of our conversation here today is that, you know, the REIT world has grown to not only be the traditional publicly traded REITs, but also the non-traded REITs as well. How do you think about the trade-off between those two structures?
Particularly for the opportunistic-minded investor, we're agnostic as to whether it's part of the, you know, sort of traditional four food groups, if you will, of real estate, the core properties. But we can also access that part that Pulkit was describing, the extended sectors, the specialty types, the data centers, the lab office space, storage, et cetera, single-family rental homes. We're looking at the cash flow generating potential of these companies and their properties. And boy, right now there is a massive refrag going on of the what had been historically somewhat stable, glacially moving demand for these and office and others to digest the new realities of demand coming out of the pandemic and the shifting motion of investor, the shifting investors of shifting movement of individuals where they want to live and where their companies are asking them to work. That's having massive implications on the demand for property. So we look at all of these impacts on demand and supply, and also then the cash flow generating potential for those assets. The broader palette of the extended sectors just gives us more opportunity to express and look for these opportunities in today's world. And we're finding a lot of them in the traditional property types as well as outside those traditional property types.
And the ability to have that broader opportunity set from the get-go,
right,
where the private core has taken that evolution over many, many years, and yet getting access opened up to the individuals is actually a pretty good advantage in order to digest all those learnings and evolution which has taken place over multiple decades for these newer structures. Of course, liquidity management is going to be key for these kinds of solutions.
So let's stick with the topic of extension, and let's extend beyond real estate. Pulkit, you've been somewhat of a regular guest on the podcast and always a pleasure to have you back. In the past, we haven't only talked about real estate. We've talked about other real assets, infrastructure, transportation, so on and so forth. We've obviously focused on real estate here today, but how do you think about kind of the other real asset categories in the context of the conversation that we've been having? Do you see some similar relationships to what we've been discussing, or are they still a bit more unique?
There are similarities and there are differences as well. So, you know, the similarities are, it's probably more intuitive that the listed segments, whether in the real estate space or infrastructure space, because of the just nature of the buyer. So, you know, Bob mentioned there is the different kinds of buyers for REITs. There is the property buyer or the infrastructure buyer, then there's the bond buyer, and then there's the equity-oriented buyer, and they create a different, they add to the volatility, which, again, it's a double-edged sword, but that's a common theme across infrastructure and real estate on the listed side, which is they tend to be more volatile, slightly more correlated, and have these upside events and downside events. The differences are that what we find is that in the as we were talking earlier that the REIT space, the publicly held REITs, tend to, on the margin, outperform private core space, probably because the sector blend is very diverse in the REIT space, and it's the crossover is happening in the private markets. We don't see that in the infrastructure space, where the private core infrastructure space is actually more diversified from a sector perspective, and there's more concentration in the listed infrastructure side to segments like utilities or telecom, which historically have been in the wrong side of the volatility return spectrum.
No, very, very insightful. Both of you, I just want to say a big thank you for joining me on the podcast here today. We talked a lot. We talked about how the real estate market has evolved over time, different ways of accessing the market, what different types of investors look for, how to think about valuation, how does this extend to other real asset categories? And I know that there's a lot more we weren't able to cover today, which is in the paper. So I would encourage everybody who tuned in to make sure you read the paper. We're going to have a webcast. Would love for you to join us then. And, you know, Bob Polkett, until next time. But thanks again for joining me on the Center for Investment Excellence.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today on JP Morgan's Center for Investment Excellence. If you found our insights useful, you can find more episodes anywhere you listen to podcasts, on our website, and on our JP Morgan Asset Management YouTube channel. Recorded on April 16th, 2024.
This content is intended for information only, based on assumptions and current market conditions, and are subject to change. No warranty of accuracy is given. This content does not contain sufficient information to support investment decisions. It is not to be construed as research, legal, regulatory, tax, accounting, or investment advice. Investments involve risks. Investors should seek professional advice or make an independent evaluation before investing. The value of investments and the income from them may fluctuate, including loss of capital. Past performance and yield are not indicative of current or future results. Forecasts and estimates may or may not come to pass. JP Morgan Asset Management is the asset management business.